Welcome to the Calcedon Foundation's virtual masterclass series, a series of webinars connecting young people with individuals who are making a difference for Christ and His kingdom as they apply the Christian faith to all of life. I'm your host, Andrea Schwartz. Calcedon's virtual masterclass series is designed to inspire and instruct the next generation of Christians to learn from individuals who have distinguished themselves in applying the faith to a specific area of life. It is meant to encourage, stimulate, and motivate young people to pursue areas of interest and ability and connect them with potential mentors and guides as they seek to serve Christ and His kingdom. Today's webinar, Faith and Wellness, features Dr. Rhett Bergeron, who is joining us today from Roswell, Georgia. Dr. Bergeron has been in practice for over 23 years with specialties which include family medicine, physical medicine, and rehabilitation. He attended LSU Medical School from 1988 until 1992. In his third and fourth years of med school, he joined the American Academy of Environmental Medicine to enhance his knowledge and practice of complementary medicine. He pursued opportunities to understand the effects of environmental toxic exposure and the internal, metabolic, and biological environment of the body. After graduation from medical school, he completed a combined internship in pediatrics and internal medicine and a family medicine residency, both in the Charity Hospital System of Louisiana. He began to apply nutritional therapies to patients with success, but also realized the complexity of many of the more advanced disease conditions. His current practice integrates nutritional, metabolic, biological, and immune therapies with conventional medicine in the treatment of chronic diseases. The emphasis is on identification of underlying causes of disease, patient education, and responsibility. Back in 2014, when I experienced a major health event, I was eager to get input from a variety of sources who were well-versed in how to reverse heart disease from a nutritional and lifestyle change perspective. Most importantly, I was determined to find someone who understood that the Christian faith applied to all of life, and health and wellness were no exceptions. At the suggestion of a good acquaintance, I sought out advice and guidance from Dr. Bergeron, whose suggestions, while not always in line with what I wanted to hear, nonetheless launched me on a continuing quest to take God's word and apply it to my health and the health of my family. Thank you, Dr. Bergeron, for joining us today for this master class.
You're welcome, and it is a privilege to be a part of this effort, and I very much look forward to being of assistance to anyone on the call, and particularly families and individuals who are trying to ask the question about what is God's calling in your life, and does it relate to health and medicine in that field. And so I'm just thankful to be here and privileged to be a part of this.
Okay. Is there anything I left out of your biography that you think is pertinent before we go to the questions?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Now, I should point out that the young people who are with us today aren't necessarily headed in the direction of becoming doctors, nurses, or healthcare providers. I would say overall, they're interested in knowing how to pursue questions of health and wellness within the context of a humanistic culture. So we're first going to hear from Savannah, whose question has to do with autoimmune disease.
Thank you, Mr. Schwartz. I know that in the past few years, my family has researched about autoimmune disease, and it seems like it's becoming a more common problem in people, but not everyone knows what it is. Could you explain what it is and give some symptoms?
Great question, and that is a true growing observation about the prevalence of autoimmune disease in our culture. So an autoimmune disease is typically defined by the medical community as a condition where the immune system attacks the body and causes symptoms of inflammation. Now, I think that's not completely accurate. I will grant that the immune system is sort of, it's been alarmed, but the way we're designed, the body just doesn't attack itself unless it's been provoked, unless there's a trigger. So what I think is a little bit more accurate to say is that something in our environment that's come into our body has alarmed the immune system, and that substance has been deposited in various places of the body, and the immune system is attacking that foreign protein or toxin, such as a chemical or aluminum or a virus. So that's what the immune system is actually attacking. So that's, I think, one of the better ways to look at autoimmune diseases. And what's really important is to find the cause. And so that's why, and I saw this in medical school, that so many of the things we studied in medicine, particularly in the coursework of pathology, so many conditions were labeled as idiopathic conditions, meaning we did not know what was the cause, and we spent much more time trying to find different drugs and, you know, prescription medications to cover up the symptoms and give someone comfort. But the drugs, of course, had often side effects and interactions, and that was a whole problem in itself. So that's what forced me to look outside of the conventional medical thinking in med school and look at different types of different approaches, different philosophies, different types of groups of physicians who looked at it from a similar standpoint. One of them was the environmental medicine group in the U.S. And so they would look at chemicals, low-grade infections such as viruses and parasites. They would look at heavy metals such as aluminum and lead, and they would look at diet. Altered food, processed food can very much be toxic to our body and trigger the immune system. So that's, in a nutshell, that's what the autoimmune situation is.
Okay, good. Now, Savannah had a follow-up question on prevention, and I imagine that you asked your question, Savannah, but I imagine it's going to be tied into a lot of what you just said, Doctor. So, Savannah, go with your question.
I saw that on your website you treat a lot of different illnesses and whatnot. So what kind of things can we be doing to help prevent things like, you know, autoimmune disease or heart disease, arthritis, cancer, things like that?
Great question, and a very, very large question. What I would say is you want to find the highest quality of food and water and environment, so that's what you're putting into your body and that's what you're living in. If you have a clean environment, then your body is going to run well and stay healthy. The other thing that I did not say earlier is that often uncontrolled stress, or you might say inappropriate responses to the situations of life, sometimes that can be very taxing and destructive to our nervous system and immune system, and that can be part of why we develop autoimmune diseases. I won't say it's the sole cause, but it can be very much a part of that. So back to your question, in every area of life, you know, we're all very fond of the Chalcedon slogan, you know, the word of God for all of life, or faith for all of life. So really, you want a philosophy of health and wellness for all of life. And so, you know, just you can't accept the status quo of what the government or the conventional medical system says is healthy, or the conventional educational system is healthy, because it's often not. Their standards are low. So you just can't assume that drinking tap water is really healthy. You can't just, you have to look at clean water, clean food, a clean environment. You have to make sure that you don't put yourself into situations, whether it's school or jobs or relationships, that are overly destructive of your body on a physical and a spiritual and an emotional level. So that's what I would say. To prevent all those things, you have to live healthy.
Okay, good. Thank you. All right, now we have Cassie, who has a question regarding education in the area of health and wellness.
Well, this is Jen, her mom. She's driving at the moment. But my daughter, Kathy, has a desire to learn about things related to the medical field. But she also has a desire to be a wife and a mother one day, and that takes priority to her. So in that regard, she's taken a CPR class, first aid course, a gunshot trauma course. Are there other ways that she can learn and get some skills that she needs and desires without having to have that college degree?
Yes, there are quite a few opportunities out there. And it depends on your level of interest and how far you want to go. I will say that just in the conventional realm, if you consider something such as a physician's assistant or a nurse practitioner that don't take near the length and the expense to finish that training as a medical doctor, and you can still, and there is a growing number of medical doctors and health clinics in this country that are always going to be looking for nurse practitioners and physician assistants to work, you know, even on a part-time basis, so that you can be a wife and mother and still be in the medical field. So that's something to keep in mind. Now, outside of that sort of conventional pathway of a nurse practitioner or a physician assistant, there are training programs for the public. I would probably suggest that if you send an email to Chalcedon, that could be sent to me, and I could send you back a response on some more detailed suggestions. But right now, I don't have some. Most of what I do is in the more of the organized medical field, and I have there's a lot more opportunity there. It's a little hard to at this moment give you some suggestions for the public, but there are many out there, and I would just have to send that by email. I think that would be best.
And that'll be fine. So I can provide that link. All right, let me inject a question here, Doctor. Could you address the concept of the priestly calling of doctors and how you as a Christian physician orient yourself to being faithful to Scripture in the practice of medicine?
Yes. I would say first and foremost, such many places in Scripture, but even clearer in the New Testament, whatever we do as to the Lord. So when I wake up on a given day, my first thought, my allegiance is not to the Georgia State Medical Board, to the U.S. government, to the Secretary of State, you know, who the business is licensed with. It's first and foremost, when I wake up, it's, Lord, what have you given me to do today? That's always, you know, sometimes you hear the adage in medicine, first do no harm. Well, I would not say that's first. It's first is work as unto the Lord. He gave me the calling. He gave me the gifts. He brought the patient before me. So that's, you know, in Him we live and move and have our being. That's so really faith is first. And every single patient, every single day, it's a sense of I'm in His presence. I'm living for Him. I'm working for Him. And this person in front of me, I have a duty to minister to them. I would say that was the way I view things from a priestly calling. But I would also say that, you know, physicians have a duty to not just to bind the wound, but to also teach. So there's a little bit of a prophetic office to what we're doing. We need to educate and motivate so that patients can take responsibility in the future and change their lives and stay away from things that may cause disease in the future.
Okay, now we have a question from the Cormick family.
Well, you just mentioned faith in your role as doctor. What role does faith have in wellness for the patient as well as the doctor?
That can be a complicated question because you could take the example of a person who develops migraine headaches just from drinking coffee. And you know, a patient will come in and we'll determine that that's the cause of their migraine headaches, and they stop the coffee and the headaches go away. You could, on one level, argue that their religious faith, that faith didn't have much to do with any of that. On the other hand, as a physician who has a priestly sort of sense of calling before God, I can use this opportunity to show them to show them that the order of the body is God created, and we can follow the laws of what we call laws of science, cause and effect. And so when I identify the trigger agent of their migraine headache and encourage them to stop it, they do so and their headaches go away. That's an opportunity to encourage that patient that ultimately God gave me that knowledge and that understanding, and I represent God in my work. So it's a sort of a way to evangelize and give God the glory. That's one way I would say that's how faith is involved.
Along those lines, and a question I received from someone, so disease is and symptoms are actually positive things in as much as they alert us to something's gone wrong. And if you're going to take the premise that the scripture says that we're fearfully and wonderfully made, that means that our bodies are going to tell us when something is wrong. Now, I've heard that things like cancer and heart disease take decades to grow. They only manifest themselves long after they start to develop. So one of the questions that a family asked was, what should people do in terms of in their youth to prevent problems when they're older?
That question relates back to what someone asked earlier about preventing autoimmune diseases and cancer and heart disease. And my answer is, well, first of all, know that the American medical system is, we all know that it's often incredibly effective at certain life-threatening, traumatic, and acute medical problems, such as meningitis and the use of intravenous antibiotics, you know, gunshot wounds and trauma surgery. So we do certain things extremely well, and America has led the world in many things. But on the epidemic chronic diseases in this country, such as cancer and heart disease, the medical establishment and the way it thinks is doing nothing to really change that. And so what I would say, first of all, is you can't trust always the establishment to understand, to think, to approach certain problems correctly. And so you have to, on your own, begin to analyze their approach and the data and the results. So what I said earlier was you have to live differently. I've often told my patients, if you live like an American, you're going to die like an American. If you're just going to be educated by the government American system, well, you're going to end up being sort of like a typical government controlled conditioned citizen. So again, you've got to understand that doctors often do not have the answers for chronic health problems. So they shouldn't even be highly sought after or trusted for your health problems. It's one thing for acute things, but for longer term chronic issues. And so what I think is important is to understand that there is decades of literature documenting nutritional deficiencies. So most doctors have no idea how to test for that. What are the symptoms of that and how to treat that? There's also a lot of literature on the toxicity of our environment and our food and water. So we need to be familiar with those things. I think that it even makes sense to occasionally, on an every 1 to 5 year basis, test yourself in certain ways in what's called functional medicine, where you can determine your mineral levels or your vitamin levels or your vitamin D level. Now, when you begin to not feel so well, you seek after a physician that understands metabolic, nutritional, or functional medicine. Any physician well-trained in those areas or those concepts or approaches, that's the type of physician that's going to really give you the best help.
So along those lines, the Cormick family had a question about how to choose healthcare providers for your family.
Yes, we were wondering, how does a family choose a doctor, naturopath, homeopath, MD, whatever? Are there certain things that one should look for or look to avoid?
Well, I would say when it comes to naturopath, there's two basic kinds of naturopaths. There are those that have been that have completed a four-year naturopathic medical college. There's only five universities in this country, roughly, and they're licensed in maybe 10 or 15 states. And in those states, such as Arizona and Washington, Oregon, they have equal function and authority as a medical doctor in those states. And of course, a naturopathic physician is going to have a very natural, holistic, you know, approach to health. You know, the only slight caution I might say is that sometimes in the naturopathic field, there can be more of a new age tendency. So I think that when you're interviewing different naturopathic physicians, it might be a high priority that you make sure you ask them up front, what is your spiritual religious orientation? But generally speaking, a four-year graduate of a naturopathic med school is going to be very well trained. When it comes to a medical doctor or an osteopathic doctor or even someone that may work underneath them, such as a nurse practitioner or a physician assistant, PA, again, if they've had training in functional medicine, which is, by the way, you know, we've all heard of integrative and alternative and complementary medicine, but the newest terminology that's been officially accepted in the U.S. and established as a true medical specialty is now called functional medicine. So that's probably here to stay. There's a growing number of residency programs, and even this is being incorporated into medical schools. So when you're looking at different physicians, you want to ask, how have they been trained in functional medicine, and how much training have they had? Because just because a physician goes to one weekend course in functional medicine doesn't really mean they're truly holistic and able to apply that yet. They're just getting their feet wet and, you know, starting to understand some new terms. So you want to ask them how much training they've had and how long they've been practicing, say, functional medicine. And that's true of even, let's say, acupuncture. Acupuncture and the approach of traditional Chinese medicine can be absolutely amazing, but it's even better if that type of practitioner has functional medicine training. So they're looking at things from a Western technological viewpoint, and they're looking at things from an Eastern, not a religious sense, but an Eastern approach where those types of practitioners from China could literally feel changes in the body, in their pulses, and it's not a religious exercise, it's a skill they developed. So that would be my answer to how to choose a healthcare provider. Is there something you'd like to follow up on that question?
No, I think you covered that really well. Thank you.
And let me make one more comment about acupuncture and Chinese medicine, because that's often thought of as an Eastern field of medicine, and it certainly could be New Age or humanistic. I once had a Christian colleague that worked with me. She was actually a automotive electrical technician. She worked for Subaru and trained their mechanics, but she did that by day. But by night and weekends, she studied acupuncture and Chinese medicine, because when her grandmother was ill, no medical doctor could help. And she found a traditional Chinese medicine practitioner who completely restored her grandmother's health. And now when this particular colleague of mine went to go to acupuncture school, what she told the teachers, the administration, is, look, I want you to present your science to me, but I don't want you to present your religious presuppositions to me. And I thought that was a very bold statement, and most of her class agreed. So you have to remember, in every area in medicine, there's often New Age tendencies and humanistic tendencies. That doesn't mean that the actual phenomenon of that science or that the physiological process in the body or a tool, a medicine that helps someone, doesn't mean it's necessarily evil because it came from a different culture. And one quick example, if you take herbal medicine, most of us would be open-minded enough to say that herbs are a gift from God that we can use properly to restore health. But some people go so far as to say, well, if herbs that are used by witches, well, those are evil herbs. No, they're just being misused. So the same thing is true in any field, whether it's just doesn't matter. We have to realize that God gave us this knowledge and wisdom, that God created and structured all things, and that our duty is to claim all these things and put it under the dominion of Christ and work for Him.
Very well said. I have to tell you that this ties into the idea of everything in essence is religious, that there is no neutrality. And since my health event, and I used to have most of my bookshelves had books on theology or homeschooling curriculum. Now I have to push some of those out of the way for all the various books that I have on health and wellness. And it's interesting when you talk about being on guard for the religious views, a lot of the books that actually have some good information always feel the need to talk about the billions and billions of years we've been around and evolutionary man. And I just realized that too, I just have to take that religious view, push it to the side, and then evaluate the content of what's being said in terms of, is this good science or not? Would you agree?
I would agree, and I would even suggest we remember Van Til's writings that every fact is a God-created fact. And any understanding that the world may have, any information they have, any truth they have is borrowed. Our Creator, Redeemer, Savior, King created and sustains all of these things. And so in our spiritual warfare of life, particularly my field of health and medicine, my goal is to take every modality in health and wellness, whether it's a CAT scan, whether it's surgery, whether it's an herb, whether it's a homeopathic remedy, whether it's an acupuncture needle. And if it works consistently, and it only works because it's based off of God's created order, if it's legitimate and it's not magic, then our duty is to give Christ the glory and bring it under His kingdom, His dominion.
All right. Jen had a question about the future for health and wellness from a reconstructionist position.
In our culture today, looking at the colleges and being anti-God, it's not a place where we would want to send our kids. And so at our standpoint right now, we just don't believe that college is the right route. But I recognize that in fields like medicine, being a lawyer, et cetera, there are certain requirements and certain skills that you have to learn, and I know you have to go that college route. So as a reconstructionist, in the future, do you see us creating something that could qualify biblically to send our kids to get those skills?
Great question. Well, I will say that there's a growing number of physicians in this country who are believers. I will not say that they're all Reformed or theonomic, but growing level of men and women who are believers who have a desire, who see the need to train the next generation. And so often, such as the clinic that I work in, one of our stated goals is to be a training center for doctors and nurses and health practitioners so that we could be a training ground, so they could do an apprenticeship here. That's a very important aspect. You know, the professional schools, such as medical school, to a certain degree, you have to go through that school to get the education and to fill certain legal requirements. But I do believe that if we prepare our young adults for the battle, and if we carefully monitor them and work with them. I mean, I went through medical school. It was very difficult because it was so humanistic and so dark. It was very difficult. But if it wasn't for the Christian families that I knew that supported me, and for the Christian Medical Dental Society, even though it has some flaws in it, but their outreach to medical students was tremendous in the support, you know, emotionally and spiritually, that it gave me. So I do think In fact, I know for a fact that when we send our young people into these professional schools and even colleges, there's a way to do it well. And I also think that we have to be very careful. We have to know our children. We have to know what their weaknesses and strengths are. And most of you probably are familiar with courses like College Plus or smaller colleges like community colleges, where you can do as much of the work, most of the work from home in a safer, less traumatic environment. And gradually, as the student succeeds, you can move to higher levels. I will say that also the smaller colleges, the smallest colleges that are even near you, are generally going to be safer. And they have often very high success rates into getting into professional schools. Do you have a follow-up question to that?
No, that sounds good. I appreciate what you...
Let me give you some advice that someone gave me 20 years ago. I was running for state senate in Louisiana, and I was finishing my last year of residency. And I went to this gentleman who had served two terms in the state senate. He was a believer, and I asked him I said, do you have some advice for me? And he said, surround yourself with the godliest men that you know that will keep you accountable, and that the agreement is there is no subject in life, there's no activity, there's not a thought, there's not a word, there's not an email account or a text on your phone that's not open to their oversight. And so that same principle, you know, when we send our young adults into different schools and colleges and professional programs, there needs to be that accountability and encouragement in the Christian community. So, for example, you go to med school and you make sure you touch base with Christian physicians, Christian Medical Dental Society, and they can be of great encouragement.
And I think that's a good protocol, you might say, for parents in general. I'm at an age where I'm not going to go to medical school and I'm not going to go to nursing school, but I can educate myself on the sorts of things that Dr. Bergeron mentioned. If we do have young people who are pursuing their calling, and I want to make a real point that it should be a calling, not a career, because career implies I'm doing this so I can make money, or a calling is God pushing you in a direction that says, this is what I want you to do. You have skills and capabilities. We've got to have accountability in the sense of letting our young people download. This is what was said in class. I didn't know how to answer it, or how would you have answered it, or how do I get around this requirement that I don't feel is godly? By having that kind of barometer to help you out, I think it makes it so the trip through the maze or the journey is a whole lot more doable and likely to produce success.
Absolutely. And I will also say this, not every situation in life is ideal. You can take Joseph, who was sold into slavery, and he's living in a pagan world. It wasn't always easy. And some of our young people will feel called, or they'll have an interest in going and say, for example, the military. Well, that's a very difficult situation. Nonetheless, you know, if someone feels called to do that, God will sustain them. God will make a way. But we have to remember the basic principles of life, of encouragement, fellowship, accountability. All those things will help nurture that student and you know, keep them on the right path. I understand your reservation about college, I promise you, but I do think that we can be a light. And the same argument about college we could even say is in the workplace. If we can be strong and successful in either area, and in fact in every area of life, I mean, look at Daniel and under Nebuchadnezzar. How did he serve a pagan king? So I do believe that God can give us the strength in every area, but we just have to know he put us there, and we have to have accountability and encouragement.
Are you aware of any networks outside of where you live that might be places that young people could go explore, like clinics or whatever? Is there a list somewhere so they could say, I just want to verify this is what God is calling me to do? Because a lot of times you can think something is what you should do, and then you get in and you look at the nuts and bolts and you say, well, this really isn't me.
Great question. So let me, if some of you have a pen, I'm going to give you a couple resources or ideas. For example, I mentioned earlier the Christian Medical Dental Society. You know, usually, in my experience, when you call on a Christian physician and you say, look, my son or daughter is interested in this field, is there a way that they could spend time with you? They'll find a way to make that happen to some degree. Secondly, the some of the functional medicine or alternative and complementary medicine groups in this country, such as there's a group called ACAM, A-C-A-M, the American College for Advancement in Medicine. Or there's another group called ACIM, the American College for Integrative Medicine. These types of groups, these websites, often people will go to their websites and you just put in where you live and they'll give you, you know, physicians that are in your area. In my experience, these physicians want to pass this down. And it's interesting that a large percentage of physicians in this complementary alternative field, they are believers, you know, at different levels, and they have a sort of sense of duty to pass this down to the next generation because it's not going to be done in med school.
Do you think there's ever going to be a time, I mean, obviously things would have to change, that licensing won't be a requirement, that people will say, go visit such and such a person, she knows an awful lot about how to deal with this or that, and that people who have trained themselves but don't necessarily have letters after their name can be useful to their extended family and their congregations?
Listen, that actually happens now. That's a two-part question, but I will say that there are, we'll say, non-professional, non-licensed people in this country who do get training. Earlier I mentioned naturopaths that were four-year graduates. There are also naturopathic colleges that are not as well, let's say, recognized. And they often have long-distance training programs and internet-based programs. And I think they're actually good programs, okay? So you can go to these type. In fact, there's one particular college called Trinity College of Naturopathic Medicine. They're actually, as far as I understand, a Christian-based naturopathic school. So again, there are institutions like that, but there's also ways to obtain these skills and apply them in your daily life to friends and family and church members. And you don't have to be licensed. The main thing about licensure and being in this field, you have to be careful about your claims and your advertising, and if you make a diagnosis, you know, you have to be careful about what you say, because some of those things can get you in trouble. But now the other part of this is about licensing. You know, it would be my belief that, I don't know, I don't think that the government should license most things in life. But that takes a complete theological shift in a culture to ever achieve that.
You're right. That is probably another whole subject for another discussion someday.
Well, remember, supposedly doctor-induced or medicine-related deaths is the third highest cause of death in this country. So, again, you just can't trust the system. In fact, I would tell you, if anyone of your family or friends or church members goes into the hospital, you never leave somebody in the hospital alone. And every time a doctor or nurse walks in that room, you're always, what do you have in your hand? What are you bringing? You know, you're double-checking things because mistakes are made.
Anybody else have a question that you wanted to have addressed that didn't get covered so far? If so, just feel free to chime in and ask.
Along with what you're just talking about, there are times that I go into a doctor's office or I go into a hospital and they make me feel like I've just lost control of my ability to make my own decisions. Just for an instance, my son was born 5 years ago, and he had jaundice in the hospital, and we wanted to be discharged before 48 hours, and they won, said we could be discharged before 48 hours. Otherwise, our insurance wouldn't pay, and they held that over our head. But then I had to get on the phone with the pediatrician in my hospital room to make an appointment for my son to see the pediatrician the next day, which I told him I would make it as soon as I got home. And they would not discharge my son until I had them on the phone. And in that kind of position, you feel so vulnerable, so weak. And so how can you interact with the doctor? Because when you've had this really bad taste in your mouth from a bad experience like that, because I know all doctors are not all like that, but I really felt like a prisoner in the hospital until I could get discharged. We had to do whatever we could to get discharged.
Well, first of all, you know, it's best if possible with your obstetrician and your pediatrician to know them and have, as you know, these to anticipate these situations beforehand and have a clear understanding of, you know, what they would say and what they typically do. The other thing, remember, is that physicians are not totally in control of the situation. There are hospital policies, there's regulatory agencies, there's health insurance, there's the hospital's insurance carrier. There's a lot of competing issues here. And so you have to understand, it's not always the doctor. It's sometimes that's the hospital policy rule, and the doctor took a promise when he got on staff that he had to abide by the rule. So it's a tough area. Sometimes you make the appointment when you're in the hospital. Doesn't mean you have to keep it, because one thing you got to remember, sometimes, in other words, when you made the appointment in the hospital, that fulfilled the hospital's duty. You know, they have a certain amount of malpractice involved. So, for example, if they have to, they've done their duty, because if they let you go, they discharge your son, and for some reason things go south, then in a court of law, an attorney can easily, you know, win a case against them because they let you go. So you have to remember there's a number of restraints and forces in this, and sometimes you just have to do your best to get through it. Or, for example, I've had patients in the hospital with their family members. They will, even though I don't do hospital work, but they would call me, tell me what was going on, and I would tell them how to navigate through the scenario.
And let me just add into that. That's why it's important on a twofold. Number one, we should be affiliated with healthcare people who share our biblical world and life view.
Yes.
But even more importantly for the future, we can't see that area to the godless or the humanist and say, that's not a good area for a Christian because he or she might be compromised. It's all the more reason to go and, as you said, doctor, reclaim an area for Christ and his kingdom. And it may mean that there's some difficult roads and things you travel through, but the answer would never be to abdicate the area.
No, and I also think that the time is so ripe now, because the American people have seen through the conventional medical approach, particularly when it comes to cancer. Everyone knows cancer treatment doesn't work often. And so many other things are failing, and we're the number three cause of death in America. So the American people are demanding health and wellness, and visits to alternative doctors and supplement sales and food courses, you know, are just exponentially rising. And this, as I said earlier, the official development of functional medicine is now a specialty in the U.S. So the time is very ripe for young adults to go into this field. And from a business opportunity, it's a very wonderful field to be in.
Well, I can tell you that I've tried my best to surround myself with people who not only will have knowledge that goes beyond mine, but will listen to what I have to say and say, you know, your body is going to tell you a whole lot more than it's going to tell me, and I have to have learned how to be aware of this is positive, this is negative, this is something I should check out or not. So I think that I'll maybe end this with, are there any particular books, and I realize that with any books in this area, one book might contradict some of the things in another book, but are there any books that you would recommend that people read just to have an underpinning so they know how to make the kinds of decisions that they need and want to make?
Well, I would say this. That's a depending on exactly we were talking about how to deal with the medical system and hospitals and difficult situations. There is no book on that. But on what we've spoken about the last hour, I would say that just about any book that deals with the concept of functional medicine, whether it relates to the thyroid or to infertility or pediatrics or chronic diseases or autoimmune diseases, when a book takes the basic premise of functional medicine, that's a good start for you, for how to approach a subject.
Well, thank you so much, Doctor. I always like talking to you.
Yes, and I wanted to offer, as I mentioned earlier, if there are particular, if there's follow-up questions or emails about particular books or schools or training programs, I'm very willing to get an answer back to anyone out there.
And how should they get a hold of you?
They can either email you and you can forward it to me, or they can just email directly at biologicalmd@realhealthmedical.com.
Okay, and I'll include that in the link to anybody who participated and anybody who couldn't participate but is listening.